Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, that was When I Ruled the World. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Today's date, November 8th, 2011. Yeah, AD.
Give it back. Same with the gas. You can never take that. Never take that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Here we are. Okay. Today, I come to you on November 8th, 2011 AD, beautiful old town Alexandria, Virginia, looking out my picture window, my window here, looking across at a beautiful park, which is just before the Potomac River. Looking out, I can see the Watergate Hotel just across Washington, D.C. But aside from this picturesque view, I come to you tonight with a heavy heart. Not only has Joe Frazier left us, former world heavyweight champion and nemesis and sometimes friend of Muhammad Ali, Heavy D is gone too. Some of you know who I'm talking about. Some of you don't. He's gone. Rapper, actor, all around good man. Here's the thing, folks. When you get to be a man my age, very old, old 49. And you have icons like Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali, even a great many of the older actors. When they pass away, one cannot help but have pause, give pause for thought of one's own mortality. It's not that we knew these people, famous people. It's that they were such a part of our culture during our time. It's as if we knew them. And one cannot help but think that if they can die, of course they can, and certainly so can you. And we don't know the moment, the hour, the day, the week, the year. It could be any of us at any time. I used to believe that actors, famous people, rich people, they couldn't die. They can't die. They're too important. They're going to be here forever. But they're just people. They're just people like you and me. I used to think that way when I was a child. They can't die. Come on. You got to be kidding me. There's got to be some way for science to keep them alive. I remember reading an article about where Cary Grant is being interviewed. And at the time, Cary was very old, and he was feeling very tired, and his health wasn't very good. And he said to the reporter, he said, "I never thought that I'd ever get old. I never thought that I'd ever, my health would fail. I always thought somehow that science would take care of that for me." And I read that and I felt, wow. And even now, I am in denial. I cannot conceive of ever dying. Even though I've been in many battles and come close many times, somehow the thought of actually dying of old age, surely it's 2011. There will be a time when science will be able to reverse the aging effect or at least prolong my life. I have hope, but it's just wishful thinking, right? We're all going to die. We're all going to get old. There's no way to stop it. We can exercise. We can eat all the right foods. We can do all the right things. Jack LaLanne lived to be 94 years old. The average man lives to be around 74. So, and up until the time of his death, recently he was on Fox and Friends. You know, and a couple of months later, he was gone. So let's give pause and give thanks for the times we wake up in the morning. I know that when I wake up in the morning, I spring out of bed. I wiggle my fingers and my toes, and I'm just the happiest man. Because we never know. We lay our heads down on our pillows at night. We close our eyes, not knowing whether or not we're actually going to ever open them again. And then when we do, we thank whoever we need to thank for giving us one more day, one more chance, perhaps one more hour. We don't know how much time we're going to have. So let's give thanks and let's think about that. The next time you get up in the morning and you're like, "Oh man, I gotta get up. I gotta go to work. I got a whole lot of stuff to do today. I got so many problems. Oh, my God. I don't want to get out of bed. Well, just take a moment and then think of perhaps how many people did not open their eyes will never see the sun again. They'll never see the sun rise or the sunset and give thanks for that and get your asses out of bed and move. When I move, you move. Just like that. Now, we say goodbye to Joe Frazier. We say goodbye to Heavy D. And with heavy hearts, we wonder who is next. All right. Well, let's get on with the show. Herman Cain. You know, it wasn't so much Herman Cain later this evening at his press conference as it was his attorney. His attorney was the man. His attorney was the man. His attorney stole the show. Tall, good-looking, southern accent, measured tone, measured words from the state of Georgia. His attorney put it down, laid it down. Then Herman Cain came in and cleaned it up. But I still have to wonder. There are 3, 4, 5 women coming out suggesting that Herman Cain wronged them. I remember a time when I was a Marine, and I said something about a woman in the bathroom or going to the bathroom or something. I don't even recall what I said exactly. But not 15 minutes later, well, Joanne, the lady's name was Joanne. I said something about her going to the bathroom or something of that nature. It was harmless. Joanne and I were, in fact, good friends. But Joanne took umbrage to what I said. Not 15 minutes later, I was called before my commanding officer to explain an alleged case of sexual harassment. Not lodged by Joanne, but by someone who heard what I said about Joanne. I had to answer sexual harassment charges. I didn't even know what the hell I'd said. And this was back in the early 90s. Well, Joanne was called in shortly after me, and she responded that she didn't have any idea what the big deal was. She was not offended. Why should anybody else be? The matter was later dropped, but that was my first and only experience with, quote, sexual harassment, end quote. I can only imagine what Herman Cain is going through right now. Women coming out of the woodwork, accusing him of sexual harassment. I want to just say this right here now. Somehow, I can see that Herman Cain might have said something off the cuff, may have made a gesture of some sort, because he's that type of guy. He's the type of guy who will say what he wants to say. He'll put it out there. He's a down-home Georgia boy, or Georgia man, if you insist. Funny, charismatic, speak off the cuff. I can see where someone might possibly be offended and take some of the things he said, might have said, the wrong way. One still wonders why so many women are coming out, though. 3, 4 women. Is there something to it? I don't know. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We'll be right back.
Having trouble paying your mortgage and don't know what to do? Introducing the all-new Freddie Mac Fannie Mae, where government lending just got easier.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank. In the past, did someone entice you to borrow too much money? Trick you into living above your means? Force you to lie about your income in order to get a loan? At the all-new friendly Freddie Mac Fannie Mae, we don't care what you did or what you do. You deserve the American dream of home ownership.
And now, with our all-new free market loan program, you'll never ever be able to get a mortgage you can't pay back. We'll pay it for you, for free.
The government got us into this mess, and the government will get us out.
The all-new Freddie Mac Fannie Mae, where paying back your mortgage just got a whole lot easier.
House and use it. Go ahead, abuse it. You can do anything. Go out and have a fling. I am the banking queen. Oh, the sweet dead and good as me. Banking queen. Don't complain or you'll hear it. Furniture needed. Do it by way of needed. While the stock's crashing, that doesn't mean a thing. I'm still the banking queen.
In Broadcasting presents Liberals of Genius.
Liberals of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. President of the United States.
Mr. President of the United States.
You single-handedly managed to choke all the life out of the world's greatest economy in record time.
10% unemployment.
No one else could have apologized more, spent more, or built a rat maze healthcare system from hell that only the IRS could love.
What were you thinking?
Thanks to you, FDR will be known as a conservative, Carter will look presidential, and Joseph Stalin won't seem like such a bad guy.
Joe was misunderstood.
So crack open a good book, sit on your butt, and help your buddies with a snowball's chance in November.
Mr. President, the one we weren't waiting for.
If you haven't been listening to Socialism is Not an Option, then you're just another lapdog. And here's why.
Let's get together this weekend. Hello, I'm Tesla.
Anyway, your call in number is 917-388-4974. And we have been listening to Annie from Southern Sense, who's given us some of the benefit of her wit and wisdom.
Socialism is not an option. The round table roundup edition, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, we'll be back right after this.
Spend your weekends with Socialism is Not an Option.
David from Stay Mad Radio.
I call in and I wanted to weigh in on the title of Bag.
Man, your show is right on point, and it's something I wanted to talk about for a little bit for a while now.
Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Socialism is not an option. I'm your host, Hessler. You're listening to the American Exceptionalism Edition. And we do have a fantastic show for you today. It's really a good one. It's part two. It's Not Your Daddy's War. Welcome to Socialism is Not an Option, the Hot Topic Edition. I'm your host, Tesla.
The entire political process offends me, so.
Very, very interesting, folks. Another call on the line, and it looks like we've got Tony. Tony, is that you?
That's me, baby. I'm just looking at your showroom in absolute amazement.
We were there. I mean, we saw the bullshit that occurred back in the 60s. Man, I feel like I'm going back in time. Don't you feel that way?
Has been co-opted by all the leftover washout hippies of your generation.
That's right. You're absolutely correct. And their kids
pretty much taken
it
over.
You are old.
Yes.
Spend your weekends with Socialism is Not an Option.
WWDB 24/7 Internet Talk Radio.
All right. That's a shout out to my main man, Tesla, who, when I first joined Blog Talk Radio, befriended me and mentored me in some of the ways of conducting a proper Blog Talk Radio show. And I still, to this day, appreciate that so much. On with the show. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. In the fictional world of George Orwell's 1984, when printed information conflicted with the newest version of truth, as Oceania's government proclaimed it, relevant documents were promptly revised by the Minister of Truth, and damning remnants of evidence stuffed down memory's hole. In the real world, when information conflicts with the truth, as the Obama team defines it, inconvenient facts are spun, obscured, or sealed, or just downright discarded. Often, important data is never collected or produced at all, eliminating the possibility that discrepancies may be revealed or inconsistent conclusions reached. The pattern of clouding Obama's personal history began in 1995 with the publication of his, I guess we can call it an autobiography, Dreams of My Father. In a 2008 New York Times article, Janie Scott noted that in the introduction, Mr. Obama acknowledged his use of pseudonyms, composite characters, made up folks, approximated dialogue, and events out of chronological order. Jack Cashel, author of Deconstructing Obama, would likely add a few words to the end of Scott's article title. The Story of Obama, written by Obama, such as with lots of help from some guy in his neighborhood. You know who I'm talking about, Bill Ayers. Yet Dreams, admitted by its author, whoever he may be, as not entirely factual, was practically the only thing the media placed in Obama's vetting file. Now, Cashel also raised doubts as to the authorship of Obama's second book, The Audacity of Hope, and Stanley Kurtz uncovered varying versions of the inspirational Jeremiah Wright sermon by the same title. Now, we all know that, well, it's come to light that JFK did not actually write the book Profiles in Courage. That it was pretty much ghostwritten. Oh, yeah, the idea for the book Profiles in Courage was Kennedy's idea, but he didn't really have time to write the book. And so he hired a ghostwriter who wrote the book. Kennedy's name was stamped on it. Didn't sell very many copies at all. In fact, Joe Kennedy bought 100,000 copies so that it would garner the proper notice in the literary world. Back then, 100,000 copies was quite a bit sold. But back to Mr. Obama, and I say Mr. with scorn and disdain. I will not say president. If any other scan investigating revealed inconvenient associations of facts, they were promptly spun and flushed down the toilet. The Fifth Estate. Not the fourth, but the fifth. Mondo Frazier, in his book, The Secret Life of Barack Hussein Obama, wrote, and I quote, "In an age in which seemingly every facet of a person's life is recorded on the file and increasingly available on the internet, the total absence of Barack Obama's vital records is an almost singularly unique phenomenon. In Obama's case, the records either don't exist, haven't been released, or have disappeared." I find that particularly interesting because me, your happy host, is vetted almost daily over the internet by those I do business with, those who seek to do business with me, and an occasional girlfriend or, you know, folks like that. Beginning in 2008, when citizens questioned whether Obama, with his unusual background, was really born in Hawaii. Recall that even MSNBC's Chris Matthews in 2007 described Obama as born in Indonesia. Hello. And whether his dual citizenship made him ineligible, the media maligned the doubters as birthers. And Obama's relevant records were sealed even tighter. As Frazier noted, asking questions was no longer the mark of an informed electorate. It was considered bad form, rude, and even racist. Another Orwellian phenomenon surrounding the birther controversy was recently discovered, in which 25 Supreme Court decisions that cited the same case that defined natural-born citizen were altered on Justia.com's public database sometime in mid-2008. Conspiracy? Orwellian? Well, you decide. The changes that I'm citing consisted of deleted references to the case name Minor versus Harpenstead, maligned numerous citations, numerical citations, and other instances of missing text. Within days, Wayback Internet Archives access made it difficult to ascertain the plausibility of Justia's owner, Tim Stanley's, explanation to CNET. Now, although the decisions remained intact, at other reliable sources. Justia, in a popular, it's a popular free site. You can find it on the net. It's interesting how the President of the United States, well, we don't know where his what his class standing was in any school he attended. He has no girlfriends. No girlfriends come out of the woodwork, no close friends, no close associates from his school days. And even those who were somewhat close to Barry during his younger years, they say that he was a Marxist, a socialist. And they know that he was a Marxist and a socialist and an anarchist and all of that because they were too. And they were all part of the same group. The only people that we know of who ever associated with Barack Hussein Obama, besides his wife and those politicos in the Chicagoland area, who are all crooks, every single one. I know because I'm from Chicago. I know of which I speak. The only people that anybody can find who knows anything at all about this guy are all a bunch of crackpots and socialists and anarchists. They're the only ones. Where's his old girlfriends? Where's his old school buddies? Who did he play marbles with? No, nobody knows. What was his class standing? I was number 3 at the Naval Academy. I was number 2 at Georgetown. I was number 6 at William & Mary. Where was President Obama in his class standing? If I were to run for office tomorrow, any office, my information would be an open book. Why not this guy? People voted for this guy, put him in the highest office in the land, and they know nothing about him. Nothing. I marvel because Barack Hussein Obama is the Mac Daddy of all con artists. Think of it, a con artist. Think of the TV series, White Collar. Think of any con artist you can think of, Alexander Mundy, the Saint. Think of all of these really handsome con artists. They speak well. They sell you a bill of goods and you buy it. And you don't even know their names. One of my favorite cons, called a pigeon drop, requires that you put your trust in a complete and utter stranger, and all he does is tell you a story. And you go to the bank, take out your money, and you give it to him. And he walks away. You get nothing in return, but he tells you you're going to get something more valuable than the money he gave you. He's a complete stranger. The con is called the pigeon drop. Well, Barack Hussein Obama has dropped a big loogie, a big pigeon dropping on the United States of America. Nobody knows this guy. Nobody knows who he is. I would like for just one old girlfriend, high school, college, to come out and say, yeah, he was a nice guy. We dated for a while, but he was smoking too much weed, and it just didn't work out. Or he was kind of kinky in the sack, and, you know, I wasn't really that kind of girl. Anything. Can any of you out there tell me anything about this guy? Besides where he went to school. And other than the fact that almost everybody he associated with was in school or as a young man was either a Marxist or a socialist or a downright damn it commie. Anybody at all. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Dude is like, it's like he fell down to earth and he's the brother from another planet. And then he decided He's going to get a couple of degrees, and then he's going to run for president. And nobody knows who he is. Anybody. Slim Jim writes in the room, you're still trying to figure out who Barry is. Good luck. Yes, I am. Many other folks I associated with swear by this guy, voted for him, put their trust in him. I cannot tell you all how many friends I have lost, how many friends, close associates, business partners, damn it, family. You hear me? Family. That have shunned me, that no longer speak to me, because I'm not drinking the Jim Jones, Barack Obama-style Kool-Aid. I asked them, well, what do you know about the guy? Oh, and they'll give you the superficial, you know, the superficial bullet points. No, but where did he go to school? They cite Harvard. Okay, but where did he go to school before that? What high school did he attend? What is his philosophical philosophy? What is his philosophy concerning government? Where did he live in Chicago? What part of town? They don't know anything. All they know is hope and change and the fact that he's black. And that's supposed to be the biggest selling point of all. He's not a white guy. So you gotta love him. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Jones, you're black too. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Don't you know your history? You're black. So what? What does that have to do with anything? The dude sucks the sweat off a dead man's balls. He's the worst president since Jimmy Carter. He's making Jimmy Carter look like Ronald Reagan. He's a bad president. He's the ultimate affirmative action hire. Pretty much a dumbass who got the job because of the color of his skin. Brainless, witless, can barely string a sentence together without a teleprompter. Who is this guy? We have vetted every single president. Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, both Bushes. Every single president has been properly vetted. We know what they had for breakfast. 10 years before they became president, we know. We know whether they ate oatmeal or egg sunny side up. This guy, nobody knows who he is. Hell, he didn't even go by Barack Obama in college and high school. It was Barry Obama. Why? Slim Jim, I'll tell you what. Slim Jim writes, friends leaving you for daring to think independently. Well, that's exactly right. I can't tell you how many of the ladies have decided that I'm not even worth talking to. You're a Republican. You're a conservative. You're not for Obama. How many friends, family, you're not for Obama? But he's black. And so are you. Oh, man, I can't tell you how many times I just want to punch the person in the face. Hell, blood relation be damned. The next time somebody throws up in my face that I should support Barack Hussein Obama because he's the first black president and because he's black and I should know my history, well, somebody's going to get a beat down. It's out of order. People have put this clown in office, and they have no idea who he is and what he stands for. Well, now we know what he stands for. But back then, back when folks were voting for him, they didn't know who this man was. We knew he had a hideous wife. just plain butt-ass ugly. Two children. And it was him. And he's from Chicago. But he's not from Chicago. He's from Hawaii. No, he's not from Hawaii. He's from Kenya. Now, it's widely held that Barack Obama Sr., a simple goat herder from Kenya, is the father of President Obama. We now know that that's a bunch of crap. False. Not only was the Barack Sr. a cocksman of biblical stature, forgive me for blasphemy, he was laying every white woman he could get his hands on. Black, dog. He was worse than Bill Clinton. He was having sex with anything that would move, that Harvard decided that he couldn't stay there anymore. He had to get the hell out of town before he impregnates the dean's daughter. So Barack Sr. left Harvard University, booted out of the country, never seen or heard from again. Barack Obama Jr. has two or three half-brothers, probably even many more than that. But he was supposed to be in Barack Obama's autobiography, just a simple goat herder. In Obama's autobiography, Dreams of My Father, he identified Barack Sr. as his father. The book, well, it's been the primary source of information for all who have written about him. It's the primary source of information, and it's all false or just... I'm getting worked up here. The book written supposedly by Barack Hussein Obama Jr. is the only document or the only information source for Barack Hussein Obama Jr. and Sr. and the whole family. When we dig deeper, we find that Barack Sr. was a hoe, sleeping with anything that would move, and then moving on to the next conquest. We know that Sr.'s character was deeply flawed. We know that he was not a socialist, not a Marxist, but a communist, and that he had a big influence on his son's life. We know that Barack's mama was a communist, not a socialist, not a Marxist, but a communist, and her influence on her son's life was, well, as much as any mother's influence can be on her son. We knew that some man called Frank, a committed Marxist, was a big influence on Barack Hussein Obama, but we are to believe here and now that Obama is not a socialist, that he is a centrist, that he is for the free market. When your daddy is a commie and your mama is a Marxist and the man who mentors you while daddy is been booted out of the country, Frank, is a Marxist, you're going to grow up to be a capitalist? How does that work? Now, I know that some of you will say, well, Rupert Murdoch, he grew up in a pretty nice household, and he was a Marxist growing up as a little boy. He was about 10 or 12 years old, 13, 14. He was a Marxist. Yes, I'm talking about Rupert Murdoch. Fox News, Rupert Murdoch. He was a Marxist. He believed that we needed to share our stuff. Right up until the time when Rupert, young Rupert, had to make some actual money on his own. And then when Rupert decided that he had to make money on his own because his father wasn't going to give him any more free jack, Rupert decided that, oh, hell no, I'm working too hard. I'm not giving my money away. I'm not sharing my money with anybody. No, no, no. I actually had to work for this money before I could be a socialist or a Marxist, because my daddy was taking care of me. He was giving me money. I'm speaking as a young Rupert Murdoch. I wish I could do an Australian accent, but I cannot. Well, when Daddy Murdoch was giving his son, young Rupert, money and taking pretty good care of him, Rupert could afford to be a Marxist and a socialist and give away stuff and say everybody should share. But when Rupert had to go out and make his own money, when Daddy pretty much kicked him out of the nest and wouldn't give him any more money, Rupert decided that, you know, my hard-earned effort should not be shared with anybody for free. And so Rupert became what? A capitalist. A die-hard conservative capitalist, because he realized that, hey, this is not easy. It's not easy to go out and make your way in the world only to give it away to somebody else who isn't even trying. But Barack Hussein Obama, on the other hand, is the opposite of that. He grew up in a pretty much middle-class household, was well taken care of by Granny, Mama, and Frank. He has never really ever had to go out and work and make money on his own to support his family. Oh yeah, that teaching assistant job he had at the University of Chicago that was somehow built up for him to be a professor is a bunch of crap. He was nobody's professor. He likes to say that he was a professor of constitutional law when he was nothing more than a lowly teaching assistant. Never, ever really had a real job where he had to go out and actually make some real money on his own by the sweat of his brow. Probably never had to do any manual labor ever. So he can afford to have this idea that we should all share everybody's stuff, as opposed to Rupert Murdoch. Now, back to Daddy. Obama's memoir is a mixture of verifiable fact, recollection, recreation, invention, and artful shaping. In other words, it's a lie. Thanks to Jack Cashel, we now know that Dreams of My Father was in large part a creation of Obama's neighborhood and unrepented terrorist Bill Ayers, who has said outright that he is the actual author of Dreams of My Father. Bill Ayers has not just hinted that he wrote the book, he outright said it. So, once again, we find that Barack Hussein Obama is nothing more than a fraud. How could a man write a book when he can barely string a sentence together without the use of some visual aid? How does that work? He can barely string a whole sentence together without He's a walking idiot. A simple product of affirmative action. And we all know, and I know, being black myself, that affirmative action does not work. There is no record that Obama's mother, Ann Durham, and Barack Obama Sr. were ever married. None. There's no marriage license. There are no witnesses. But we do know from Ann's registration at the University of Washington that Ann did take Obama's name. So we must analyze what we know about their relationship. Daddy Obama, the Ho of Harvard. And supposedly met Obama in a Russian language class. Imagine that. A Russian language class. One of two classes that we know Ann took at the University of Hawaii in the fall semester of 1960. The meeting story, however, comes from dreams and is therefore unreliable. Sally Jacobs, in her book, The Other Barack, makes references to Barack Obama's transcripts from the University of Hawaii, Syracuse University, Frank C. Lam Collection, and some others. The transcript would show us if Obama Sr. took the same Russian class as Ann did. Now, when requested, those records that Sally Jacobs had seen, well, they were unavailable. When a family lineage is so clouded, when we don't even know who the guy is who we put in office, when he's talking about how much money we should be allowed to keep, that there should be a cap on how much money we should be allowed to make, and that fat cats, corporate bankers, should, well, just be fair. Even though most of the wealthy folks in this country pay all of the taxes, they should pony up a little bit more, a lot more. This is what happens when you elect a con man, a con artist. That's what America did. They put their faith in somebody they did not know. And what we have here is a classic case of America falling for the oldest, most reliable con of all. It is called the pigeon drop. And how ironic that name of that name, the pigeon drop. Remember that. Look it up. Because we fell for it. Thank you all for listening tonight. All my good friends, Slim Jim, Tesler, Ned King, New, Pendleton Marine, Evil Clown, Don Gall, Gregory Prince.
When you walk through the garden,
Bump,
you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon.
God bless you.
Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul.
Ask Obama how
you gotta keep the devil way down in the hole.
That's right, Slim Jim.
He's got the fire and the fury.
He's got the only Social Security
at his command.
I'm told he had three or four.
Well, you don't have to worry.
Well, good night, folks. We'll talk more about it.
If you hold on to Jesus' hand, we'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Thank you.
help me keep the devil